Hello, boys and girls. Welcome in to the Boys and Girl Podcast with Cowboys NFL Network reporter Jane Slater and NFL Network producer Bobby Belt. A Cowboys community with the inside scoop on the Dallas Cowboys. Now, coming straight to you from the Lone Star State, here's Jane and Bobby.
Well, the COVID has finally hit the Dallas Cowboys. I mean, we've been seeing it throughout the league. And really, as we start looking at cities and states across the U.S., as we start getting into these fall and winter months, we are seeing the COVID cases rise. And it looks like Andy Dalton will not be playing against the Steelers this weekend, not because he's still in concussion protocol, but he has been moved to the COVID reserve list.
Which maybe it's a little bit of a blessing in disguise that he goes into concussion protocol. He's not been out there in these huddles. He has been in the quarterback meetings. Last update I saw, which we're recording this on Tuesday, election day. We have no idea who won yet, by the way. When this comes out, if you're, please forgive us. We're not neglecting the biggest story in the country. We just don't know right now when we're recording. When we were recording this, as of this point, McCarthy said the last time that he had seen Andy Dalton was Saturday in the quarterback meeting room, that he did not make the trip to Philly, so he was not in that incubator of an airplane, and he wasn't with the team on the road. And so those are all positive things, I guess, and I'm sure we'll learn more about who all was exposed and what sorts of actions the Cowboys are taking to keep this under control. But as I said, there may not have been a better time for this to happen than with a guy who was in concussion protocol and a guy who wasn't mixing with the rest of the players the last week or so.
And keep in mind, too, we don't know if he actually has it or if he came in contact with a family member that had it. Again, as we are recording this on a Tuesday, it's still new information, but it's enough that he is now obviously on that reserve list. So there's going to be some quarantining for him. And they're moving forward Ben DiNucci, which means Garrett Gilbert, right? He would be the...
Garrett Gilbert is the backup, which I got to wonder, because, you know, Jerry seemed so certain that that Dalton was going to be ready to play this weekend in terms of through the concussion protocol. So it is interesting to me. I got to look back and figure out when they signed Cooper Rush, because Cooper Rush had to go through COVID protocol and he wasn't going to be able to be available until this week, which made you think Dalton was going to be out for Pittsburgh, because why else sign Cooper Rush and have him go through COVID protocol if he was going to be. So it does make me wonder sort of what led to the Cooper Rush signing. But you do have three guys here now, Cooper Rush and Garrett Gilbert and Ben DiNucci, and it's a lot of...
I think in Dallas, we've seen that you can never have enough quarterbacks. I mean, the Tony Romo, Kellen Moore, Dak Prescott. I mean, think about how many years we went in Dallas. I remember the year they decided to go two quarterbacks, and it was like the first time in forever because they'd always carried the three. Mm-hmm. And then this year sort of feels like that, you know, that 2016 year where it's like you can't find enough. And especially, I think they've got to carry a few more quarterbacks this year for this very reason.
Yes.
The possibility that someone could end up with COVID. And then, of course, you've got to isolate, you know, different position groups the way that they're doing things this year. So the league is being very, very careful as it relates to COVID. And of course, you have to have two negative tests in order to rejoin the team.
My quick question for you, if Dalton is out because of, you know, this COVID issue and everything else, we all love Ben DiNucci here, friend of the show, a really good guy. Do you think there's any chance the Cowboys look at this and go, that was so rough against the Eagles, which this is our first time talking since that rough Eagles game, but that was so rough against the Eagles that maybe we should look at giving Garrett Gilbert a shot or getting him up to speed? Or do you think they just roll with DiNucci? I'd like to see DiNucci because Pittsburgh is his hometown. And so, you know, you would get the chance to play his hometown Steelers, and I think that'd just be nice for him in a year of not nice stories.
Well, you and I had privately said, if I was the Cowboys, I would have rolled out with Ben DiNucci this week, period. Let Andy Dalton get another week where he can rest up, and then we've got the bye week.
But we privately said that for a reason, because now we look like loons after how things went against Philadelphia. But go ahead, right. Continue.
Well, he's 3-13 against the Steelers, and he's lost seven straight. And so I'm thinking, how get meaningful playing experience for the rookie? And Mike McCarthy has said that that's a position he wants to strengthen. In other words, he wants to develop. And what better to develop this kid than put him in a divisional game on Sunday Night Football and then put him against an undefeated 7-0 Pittsburgh Steelers team led by a guy like Mike Tomlin. And you got Ben Roethlisberger coming in here with guys like James Conner, Juju Smith-Schuster, Eric Ebron. I mean, go down the list. So offensive firepower, you're going to need your defense to do what they did against the Eagles, and then some, and then some, and then some, because I think slowing down this offense is going to be really, really tough.
I believe the Steelers still lead the NFL in quarterback hits as well from a defense this year. Through three games, the most Dak has ever been hit in a game, I believe, was 9. If it's not 9, it's 10. Through 3 weeks this year, Pittsburgh was averaging 11 quarterback hits a game. They were averaging every game more than Dak had ever been hit in a game. And we've seen Dak take some pretty big hits before. And so it is that's a defense that'll get after you. That's a veteran defensive coaching staff that I'm sure is going to go, let's see, how can we, make things as difficult as possible on this young quarterback and as confusing as possible? And let's take advantage of some of these holes in the offensive line. And it has been a really bad offensive line. And a lot of it, of course, due to injuries and, rough combinations and some unforeseen things and some things that, you know, maybe they've shot themselves in the foot a little bit. Terrence Steele, But, that is why I think that this week I was really glad we've tried for several weeks now to talk to Duke Manyweather, who is the offensive line guru. He is the founder of OL Masterminds, trains a number of guys leading up to the draft. We're going to get his perspective today on the Cowboys offensive line and some of these draft prospects who Cowboys fans may start learning about as we get closer to draft time. Some of these tackle prospects like Penei Sewell and Rashawn Slater. So we now welcome Duke Manyweather. Joining us now is Duke Manyweather. He is an offensive line skills trainer, the offensive line guru. He is the founder of Offensive Line OL Masterminds. He also trains a number of draft prospects leading up to the draft, working very closely with a number of them at Michael Johnson Performance Center in the Dallas area. And he's worked closely with a number of the Cowboys players over the years and has a really good feel for what good O-line play looks like. And so with so many questions about the Cowboys O-line and questions about the future of it and what type of players they may be looking at in the draft, there's nobody better to talk to than Duke. And you can follow him on Twitter at BigDuke50, and on Instagram it's just a little different, it's at TheBigDuke50. Duke, how you doing?
Doing well. Thanks for having me, guys.
Absolutely. Really excited to have you. I'm curious, I believe you played O-line at Humboldt State, right? And so correct. I know that that's kind of how you got your start. And it's interesting. If people were to look at your path, for those that understand the draft process and understand the combine training process, you're kind of a unicorn, Duke, that there's not a lot of guys doing the strength program portion and the skills training. And yet I know that's you do both of those things. And so talk a little bit about how you got into training offensive linemen, like how that path came to be and a little bit of the work that you do with guys.
Yeah, you know what? Where other people normally grow up and come up playing different positions, I was an offensive defensive lineman my entire life, from Pop Warner all the way through high school, college, and a brief stint in the Arena Football League. So offensive line has really been my passion and has been my lane that I've always really stayed in. I was an undersized offensive lineman in terms of height. You know, I'm 6 foot tall, but some of the things I knew I could control early on was how hard I worked, my preparation in terms of strength training, my preparation in terms of the mental part, knowing what I was doing, the techniques, and all that type of stuff. So I took that type of stuff to heart during my time in high school and in college, and became really a student of the game and understanding what I can control. My parents always told me, hey, listen, life isn't going to be fair, but I tell you what, if you work your tail off, you know, you'll start to get to where you want to be. And I've just kind of kept that mentality all the way through. So went to Humboldt State, played at Humboldt State, had that brief stint in Arena Football, immediately got into coaching after I was cut from the Arena Football League. And then from there, I was able to do something pretty unique where I wore two hats. So I was an assistant strength coach at Humboldt State under the legendary Drew Peterson. And then in the afternoons, I had my own O-line room at College of the Redwoods Junior College, which was about 30 minutes south down the road from Humboldt State. And so for 3 years, I bounced back and forth being an assistant strength coach and then being an offensive line coach and run game coordinator, and just kind of taking everything that I had learned, and I tried to read everything, listen to everything, learn from other people in terms of offensive line play, and I started to develop my own philosophies on O-line. One of the things I think really helped me was the learning process and the background that I had and was learning and honing in strength and conditioning and how the body worked and how everything was a system allowed me to more effectively coach offensive line from a biomechanics standpoint and mechanical advantage. So when we were talking about certain techniques that may have been, you know, historically, you know, just kind of passed down, I was always the critical thinker and I was curious to say, maybe there's a more effective way for this type of body type and for this guy who doesn't have like that 6'6 reach that can be really effective. And so that's kind of where my philosophy went in. And so I kind of wore all kind of hats in terms of the strength and conditioning aspect, the, you know, skill and technique, and then, you know, also the overall like coaching philosophy. So did that for 3 years. Then I was fortunate enough to stay at Humboldt State as an assistant strength coach. But then I ended up moving over to the D-line side of the ball at Humboldt State. And I coached D-line for 3 years at Humboldt State, my alma mater. That was unique because it gave me a perspective of understanding how to attack offensive linemen and what we were trying to do as a defensive scheme. And I was able to coach some really good players. But when I went moved back to the offensive side of the ball, it was like a whole new world. Like I knew exactly what I needed to do in terms of developing offensive linemen, in terms of putting them in the best possible case scenario to have success every single down. And that's really turned this into a complete niche. I was fortunate enough to garnish the attention of LaCharles Bentley. I went down there and worked with him for a couple of years. Me and him worked closely together. We went our separate ways and it didn't work out for me there. And because it didn't work out for me there, it's probably the best thing that ever happened to me because it allowed me to really dig deep, do the work on myself that I needed to do to mature and to really come on into my own maturation and take everything that I had learned from coaches that knew more than me, that had done more than me, and then really streamline it to what I wanted to be. So many people told me that you're going to have to pick. You can't be a strength coach. You can't be a position coach. You can't be an evaluator. And my question was always, why can't I? And I thought that combining all three of those always gave me a unique advantage to be able to see into the future and predict potential and, you know, the capacity for development. And I've really stuck to my guns on that. And I've really worked to continue to stay in that lane. And that's kind of what you're getting now. So what people are starting to see now in terms of, you know, what we're putting out with O-line masterminds and, you know, me working with many of some of the top offensive linemen in the league today is really 10 years of deliberate practice. When we talk about mastery and when we talk about, you know, those 10,000 hours, it's a culmination now really over 12 years of work. So it's not something that I just got into and it happened. This has been a, you know, trickle down and comprehensive type deal.
Duke, this is a Cowboy-centric podcast, so we've got you on here because we know you've worked with Cowboys current and past. Can you talk to me about some of the guys you've worked with and even some of the guys in the league so that our listeners have a grasp of just who you've gotten your hands on?
Yeah, absolutely. Lyle Collins I've worked with from the Cowboys. Definitely have worked with now Cam Irving. Started to have a rapport with Tyler Biadasz. I worked with Connor Williams pre-draft, getting him ready for his pro day and all his individual workouts. And I've got a really great relationship with a lot of the guys on the Cowboys team, including, you know, former and current players, Ron Leary, Jeremy Parnell, all those guys I trained for 4 or 5 years, even when they went to other teams. So the lineage and the roster in terms of Cowboys have been pretty extensive. Great organization. They care about their players over there. The players kind of get it in terms of what they need to do to get better. In terms of other teams, since this is a Cowboy-centric podcast, many people are going to hate to hear that Lane Johnson is one of my favorite people, but there's nobody that puts more into the game in terms of preparation of his body than Lane Johnson. You know, Brandon Brooks is a good guy that I also consult with. You know, Teron Armstead from the New Orleans Saints, Andrews Pete from the New Orleans Saints, Eric McCoy from the New Orleans Saints. There's just, and the list goes on.
Just go ahead and say half the Pro Bowl.
Yeah. You know, so interesting enough, at one point we did have a great deal of Pro Bowlers. You know, when you look at who O-line masterminds draws in terms of Ryan Jensen, Trent Brown, Mitchell Schwartz, Teron, some of the guys that I mentioned, You know, and now we've got our new class from the past 2 years that have really come in and can start to take the lead by storm, like Mekhi Becton from the Jets and Kevin Dotson from the Steelers and, you know, Cam Clark from the Jets. So we've got, you know, just a bunch of guys that are going out there and believing in what we do. And it's the true mastermind principle. When you get one or two or more in a room with the same common goal, it streamlines success and it lowers the chance for failure. And Napoleon Hill came up with this concept 80 years ago, and it's nothing new. It's just I did the work to go and find out how these people got successful and how they streamlined success. And so I brought that to O-Line Mastermind.
When you look at, you mentioned there that you worked with Connor Williams pre-draft, and I think there's been some discussion about this. People have wondered, do you think he's more of a tackle? Do you think he should be playing tackle instead of guard?
So here's the thing. Pre-draft, how I evaluated Connor, I thought that he was going to be a guard. I thought that the way he liked to play, and you can still even see that now, he likes to play square. He likes to play flat. He doesn't like a lot of space. And so that really does project into guard. Now, you guys that followed me, you guys know I go on these soapboxes and rant. I don't believe every tackle automatically kicks in the guard. I believe that there's physical traits and there's style of play that dictate that projection inside. And Connor just displayed some of those as I talked to you about as far as wanting to work in the short area. People need to understand this. Connor, going into his last couple of years at Texas, had two different O-line coaches. Mm-hmm. Okay, there was an O-line coach change. Connor also dealt with an injury. Okay, coming into the league, now, what year is this for Connor?
This is year three.
Yeah.
Uh-huh. How many O-line coaches has he had?
Three.
So when you start to look at that track record of a guy changing positions, you know, it's going to take time. We give up on guys so quickly in the NFL. When you look at the high school development cycle and the college development cycle and even the Olympic development cycle, if you max those out, it's 4 years. It's 4 years of full intent development to where people end up realizing their potential and really performing at that pinnacle level. So if you got a guy that is going through that much adversity with changing coaches and injuries, and he's dealt with injuries even as a pro, I mean, you still got to give that man a chance to develop, in my opinion, because when guys are rehabbing from injury and changing positions, Let's just take the injury aspect. The injury aspect, guys are working to get back on the field and rehab. They're not getting better at their position at that point. They're getting better in terms of their health and overall strength and their ability to be available to the team. But think about how much you miss in that time in terms of actual development. And then you factor that into having different coaches. It makes it difficult when you're spending a lot of your time rehabbing. So that's kind of what's going on with Connor. I'm not ready to give up on Connor yet. I think that he still flashes some bright spots. I think that in terms of overall technique and just overall philosophy and how he plays can be cleaned up a little bit. Also think that he still needs to continue to get stronger. And I think that is possible. And I think that some of those injuries have kind of halted his ability to get functionally stronger. But I see improvement out of them.
I like to defer to people that are smarter than me. And since you've seen so much of these guys and obviously this position over the years, it's no secret that the offensive line has been a weak link for the team this year. How much of a drop off is there really in the absence of a Tyron Smith, of a Travis Frederick, of a Zach Martin? What do they do that is so special? And can we expect this new crop of guys to develop into that at any point this season or even sniff it?
So here's the thing. Dallas Cowboys organization and Dallas Cowboys fans have been spoiled over the years with a tremendous and anomaly of an offensive line. When you look at some of those names that you just mentioned, you could very easily say at the top of their games, all of those guys that you mentioned were the pinnacle and the prototypes of their position. When you talked about if you want to build a left tackle, you thought about 77 Tyron Smith. When you talked about you want to build a center, toughness, competitive edge, smarts, consistency, availability, it was Travis Frederick. Zach Martin is still the gold standard for guard. When you look at the guys that have worn, you know, the Dallas Cowboy jersey and has played guard, there's two guys automatically now that come to mind, and that is Larry Allen and Zach Martin. And, you know, Lyle Collins. Lyle Collins, interesting enough, played left tackle at LSU, kicked in the guard, and then ended up learning a new position at right tackle. And I think the last 2 years, we've really seen, quote unquote, you know, an awakening of how good Lyle is. So when you take those guys and you lose those guys, there's going to be a major drop off, because those guys are arguably the top two and three at their position, respectively, in the entire NFL. So when you lose that, for one thing, when you go across the NFL, there's not a whole lot of guys like that even starting in the league. Mm-hmm. And then when you take those starting, that starting layer away, there's not a lot of valuable backups that are able to come in immediately and start and play at an effective and a high level. And I think we've seen that over the years when Tyron's had to miss games. I think we've seen that. Luckily, you know, when Travis was out, I think Joe Looney did a tremendous job filling in for him. You know, you were able to win still with Joe Looney. He was not going to be Travis Frederick, but Travis Frederick was Travis Frederick when sperm met the egg, quote unquote. You know, like there's nobody that's going to beat him. So with that being said, I think a lot of times people panic and, you know, they have these expectations that are lofty. And granted, when you're in there as a professional football player, it's all about results. It doesn't matter if you're the backup or the starter, but at the end of the day, the guys that are playing right now are not to the level of those starters, and they were backups for a reason, and they were available for a reason. But my whole point that I want to get over to this is, don't let your eyes fool you. The guys that wore 71 at right tackle in Lyle Collins and 70 at guard, 72 in Travis Frederick, 77, even when Ron Leary was there, you know, that wore 65, those guys were borderline very good to elite players across the board, respectively. And it was a reason why they had the number one offensive line for, you know, 2 to 3 years. So losing those guys is a tremendous blow, because you built your team, you built your philosophy on having those studs up front. And when you lose one, it's like, okay, you got to plug in. You lose two, it's like, uh-oh. You lose three, uh-oh. Now, tonight, we saw a Dallas Cowboys O-line that was unrecognizable. And it really hit me. Go ahead.
I was going to say, can that explain then why we've seen such a drop-off from Ezekiel Elliott when you don't have the confidence in that offensive line? Is it fair for people to criticize the fact that he hasn't had those 100-yard games? I think it's easy to look at the box score and say, well, his stats aren't what they are. But, I mean, again, I like to defer to people that are smarter than me. Could that be the explanation of it? As simple as it might be, you just don't have that wall blocking for you right now.
Absolutely. Well, when we're talking about, you know, actually getting yards and, you know, opening holes and the continuity, offensive line is a position of five individuals with one common goal, you know, five as one, so to speak. So continuity in that group of those five guys across the board is very important, okay, for the group itself. But furthermore, continuity and understanding how certain guys are going to play and the timing and setting up blocks on combo blocks coming off the second level, those are all things that backs not only see, but read and feel. So having a different lineup in there every couple of games and having new guys that may not be as powerful at the point of attack definitely changes up the timing and the flow in which Zeke is getting his work in. With that being said, of course, Zeke's got to do a better job of taking care of the football when he does have those opportunities. But, you know, as he showed, he's very accountable for getting better in term and owning, you know, some of the mistakes that he made. But absolutely, it impacts the run game and even the protections tremendously with not having the same five guys in there and then having a new five guys in there. With that being said, it's still a really good thing that Zach Martin is in there and he's healthy and playing still at an elite level. One of the things that Zach is really good at is always being in great position, being able to finish. He's probably the best recover artist I've seen in the game, which leads him to just not getting beat. I think you've seen the last couple of weeks, Cam Irving is a very valuable backup at left tackle. He's played pretty decently and held up well. He's not going to be tyrant. Nobody expects him to be. But in terms of what Dallas has had in the past, in terms of backups, I think Cam Irving is a guy that's played a lot of football. He's with the Chiefs last year, had an extended role with them with some injuries. So he's played some football and has had some experience. I think Tyler Biadasz is very promising. I think that you've got something there with Biadasz, smart kid, tough, and is going to be, I think, very good for a long time to come. And Terrence Steele, you know, I think Steele is a guy that right now he was thrusted into the lineup sooner than he needed to be. He still must work on his consistency in his pass set, setting to his spot, not overstepping by the inside counter move, and then also needs to continue to get better with his hands. Once he learns how to not only be consistent with his pass set and making sure that his feet are winning the fight, he's going to be in better position to more effectively use his hands. And that's something that takes time. I think Steele also needs to improve in his overall functional strength. That way he holds up to some of those bull rushes that guys are liking to see. But he shows some flashes and some promises, but he's not a guy that anybody expected to play this year. So with him being thrusted into the lineup, it's a thin line because you like those guys getting game experience, but you also worry about, you know, putting those guys in too soon. And it definitely could take its toll on you mentally when week after week after week, you feel like you're not having success. So, you know, my advice to any of those guys is just keep chipping away, find something to get better at every single practice, take it series by series, moment by moment. And before you know it, you'll start to see improvement in the game and just the overall feel and the confidence for in which they play with. And they still got a guy like Zach Martin they can lean on. They still, you know, got Cam Irving, who's played a lot of football. You know, again, like I said, Connor is still checking out and figuring out his game. So it's not what it's been in the past, but at the same time, all is not lost.
It's interesting. That's the thing I think most people have felt like, okay, there's a lot of things that have been outside of your control. You know, Tyron Smith getting hurt, Lyle Collins getting hurt, Zach Martin getting hurt, Travis Frederick retiring, you know, things like that. I think when the season started and Tyron Smith was healthy, and then it's okay, you've got Cam Irving, you signed him to be your swing tackle, and then you start with Terrence Steele. Okay, Cam Irving gets hurt. All right, but Brandon Knight's there, and Brandon Knight started games for you at tackle last year, and then you don't go to Brandon Knight. And then you go, okay, well, I mean, you've got Greg Sinnott and Jordan Mills in your building now, and these are veterans who have played before. And then you've got, okay, we've seen Zach Martin bump out to right tackle and play there, and you've got a top 100 pick that can slide in at guard at Connor McGovern. Do you find it interesting just from the outside that they have seemingly been so committed to Steele with there's been some options that it would seem like there's some options within the building that you could go with while Steele has been struggling as much as he has?
Yeah, you know, but I think a big factor is this as well. For one thing, I don't know how the coaching staff views different personnel. I don't really know this coaching staff too well. What I do know of Joe Philbin is he's a guy that demands a lot in terms of execution mentally. So though we may think that some of these guys are valuable options or valuable options at the tackle spot, if they're not picking up the concepts, they're not going to play for Joe Philbin. So that's one thing in which we see the physical part, and we know what the physical part, especially with a guy like, you know, Jordan Mills, who has started a ton of football games. But if he's not picking up the playbook in enough time, then, you know, he's not going to see the field, because most coaches will rather take a lesser athlete and talent versus a guy that they and take a guy that they can trust and know is not going to have, you know, the mental errors or the missed assignments over a guy that is going to be physically dominating, but is going to mess up all the time, that may put the offense in a bad decision. It's give take, but, you know, that could be some of the thought process behind why some of these guys aren't getting the opportunity. It could be that they're just not picking up the concepts and the playbook as well as coach wants them to.
Any suggestions now that we're just learning that Andy Dalton is not dealing with concussion protocol this week, but he is now on the reserved COVID list.
Oh, yay.
And DiNucci against the Steelers. I assume you watched the game on Sunday night. Was there anything that stood out to you that might lend itself to helping him out a little bit back there?
I mean, they tried with those quick throws. They tried with the quick screen game to not have them stand back there very long.
How do you help that kid out against the Steelers defense?
Honestly, it's going to be rough because what the Steelers do well is they're able to get after you with their base defense, but then they're also able to disguise stuff really well. So the Steelers will line up and give you a bunch of different looks where they spin the wheels late on the back end with their secondary when they're bringing pressure. They'll send false pressure. So it makes it extremely difficult on a young quarterback to kind of get a feel and a read. You factor that in with the offensive line that isn't, you know, to that standard in terms of completely starting. Again, you've got guys there that have played now. But, you know, communication is going to be key up front. I think it's going to be important for the young quarterback to not try to do too much. It looked like on Sunday night that the game was moving fast for him. But it looked like he was moving faster in a panic. You know, he didn't have that confidence. You could tell people say happy feet or seeing ghosts. It was just, you could tell like he was kind of out of his element. He wasn't confident in with his ability to really get the job done. I think what the coaching staff is going to really have to do against this defense, though, is try to come out and establish the run early on. Even though Pittsburgh has showed an innate ability to take away the run. Saw that 2 weeks ago against Tennessee. They did a great job against Derrick Henry, really great job. But they have to have some semblance of a run game, whether it's the quick screen game to the outside, you know, making sure that Pittsburgh is able to run, whether it's setting up Zeke on, you know, some of the screens, the running back screens. But they're going to have to do something, a lot of play action to kind of protect him and get Danucci out on the edge. He is a good athlete. So if we can get him outside the pocket and throw on the run, that could work to some advantage and maybe hit some big shots downfield. But again, it comes back to trying to really establish the run game and not really give away the ball deep into the territory, and then also try to play the clock management game.
We're a fan of Danucci on this show. We had him this offseason. I got to tell you, I'm nervous for him. Bobby, I'm nervous for him.
I know, to that point about protecting the man's life and making sure that he doesn't get crushed by TJ Watt out there. when you look at, if you were, you know, working on this game plan and you saw, you know, the skill that the Cowboys have at receiver and some of the issues that they've had pass blocking, I mean, if you were in there as the offensive line coach, would you be hammering home the idea of, hey, look, let's, you know, if we want to try and push the ball downfield at all, like, let's try some max protect stuff. Let's keep eight in. We got these receivers that are so talented. You know, we can send two of them out there and try and win on their routes and see if we can hit something. I mean, would you be looking at some max protect options with how talented Pittsburgh's pass rush is and how depleted Dallas's offensive line is?
How many throws did he have for 10 yards, though, Bobby?
Yeah, I know, but that's the thing. That's the thing. I'm saying change it up. Instead of just quick throws to save him some time, some max protect and see if he can get downfield. Who knows?
So here's my thing with max protect, and it goes to the same thing with when you look at people and say, why didn't they give such and such help? Or, you know, if it's not a part of your offense in terms of actual packages and scheming, it's difficult to just put that stuff in on game day. So if we're looking at game plan type stuff, I think your max protect has to be a part of your play action pass looks, your run action looks. If you have some type of RPOs, they have to be a part of that as well. That way it's not dead giveaways of, hey, we're going to max protect, send two out on a route. It looks like that you're lining up to play the ball, to run the ball. But then that all goes back to trying to at least get some type of run game going early. That way it allows you to get those run actions in, maybe get on the edge and pop one down the field, and then be in the situation to be able to max protect, you know, maybe a big formation, and then get, you know, a one-on-one matchup in man protection down the field. I think it's all still predicated very much on being able to have some early success with some type of run game that allows you to be able to open up things, so to speak.
I'm curious for your thoughts. We haven't talked about, this is one of the only guys we haven't talked about yet, and this is a guy that I am a big fan of, and that's he's currently on IR, and that's Brandon Knight. The undrafted rookie out of Indiana last year who was forced into some game action. Like, so when I see him, like, I see obviously a guy who, I mean, you can see the play strength issues are there at time. He has some issues with bull rushes and things like that. But to me, it's like, okay, but the dude, like, he's a good enough athlete that he gets to his spot and then he fights. Like, he's blue collar bulldog Doug Free type to me. What do you see when you look at Brandon Knight, and do you think he has a future as either a swing tackle, or if the offensive line is right enough that, you know, hey, in some circumstances that might be a guy that could be your right tackle in the future or something like that? Do you think he has that sort of ability?
Well, Brandon Knight, to me, everything you just said was 100% correct. He was a guy that went out there. He didn't look like that. He was out of place. He was a guy that had success against, you know, 70 to 80% of the guys, some of those elite guys. He did struggle with, but most people are going to be in that situation.
Right.
He fought his butt off. He was always in good position. And so you saw with him, he's a viable option to have out there as a swing tackle, or even, you know, like an extra tight end type blocker, and, you know, some jumbo packages. But he's a guy that I think that you could still continue to develop and really lean on in terms of a valuable asset to a team as a backup player. It's interesting enough because a couple of weeks ago when he got hurt, he got rolled up extremely bad. And then I'm pretty sure he finished the game. Mm-hmm. And when he got hurt and rolled up, I saw it looked bad. And then he kind of hopped up and continued to play. I said, oh, maybe it wasn't that bad. Next morning, you know, you saw he had surgery.
Yeah.
So that kind of shows you the type of toughness that the kid has. And you're not going to win because of Brandon Knight, but you can win with him at one of the positions. So I like some of the stuff that I've seen for him. And I think that, again, he's just a guy that needs to continue to develop.
So when you look at, as guys look forward to the draft and stuff, you know, people are already going, hey, we might have a top five pick here. So, hey, Penei Sewell, you're somebody we could look at, or, as I'm, calling for behind me, Rashawn Slater, who I saw put Chase Young in the dirt about three times when he played Ohio State last year. It's a great last name, Slater. Now when you look at, I know that you've actually already started working with Rashawn Slater. Sewell and Slater, two guys who opted out of the season. Slater, the tackle from Northwestern. First, just tell us a little bit about Rashawn Slater, what kind of player he is. And I mean, is he a cornerstone type of left tackle? Is he the type of guy you can build an offensive line around, you think?
Yeah, absolutely. So, you know, Rashawn went to Northwestern. He's a very smart guy, very cerebral, but just very consistent, consistent as a person, consistent as a worker, and really consistent as a player. Has a large skill set already in terms of what he's able to do with his sets, what he's able to do with his hands, his timing, his knowledge of leverage is really impressive. And then the thing that I think that most people don't know about him is he's freakishly strong. He's extremely strong.
That is the biggest thing I had to ask you, because I was with you last year watching you work out Cameron Clark, Sadiq Charles, Mekhi Becton, and they're monsters in size. And that was the one thing I was going to ask you about, is because when you look at Rashawn Slater, just you see him, you're like, he doesn't look like some of the big maulers. He doesn't look like he's built like that. But then you see on the field, it's like, man, how's he putting guys in the dirt like that then if he's not strong?
He is put together, I think, better than what people think. His lower half, extremely large and muscular legs. He's got a video that he showed me. He front squatted 505 for like five reps. And he's just an extremely strong player, and strong in the correct areas. Strong with his rotation, anti-rotation, really good, you know, overall core strength, upper back. Is really strong. Of course, legs strong, upper body really strong. So to me, when you pair, you know, some of the physical ability that he has in terms of the way he's able to move, he reminds me how he moves Teron Armstead. He's very fluid with how he moves. Feet are light, but heavy when they need to be, when he needs to go get somebody. Really has that really fluid set, but then can aggressive set, get his hands on guys and end the fight immediately. Has ridiculous top end range in terms of getting to his spot and being able to run guys over the top of the pocket, and even be in position to finish guys at the top of the pocket, as you saw against Ohio State with Chase Young. So Rashawn's a guy that many people are already starting to label him, oh, he's going to have to move inside. If I'm a team, I'm not moving him inside. Like, and you'll see it the first day, when he lines up at tackle, when he gets to the top of his set and he's able to finish at the point of attack at the top of his set, teams are going to go, oh, yeah, that's a left tackle. So that's not a guy that I'm willing to move inside. That being said, he absolutely could move inside with you know, little to no hiccup at all. But he's a guy that is going to be a really good player for a long time.
And what about Panay Sewell there? That's another guy I know you've seen a lot just from working on the Joe Moore Award, the annual award for best offensive line unit. I know you've seen him, and we talked to Daniel Jeremiah a couple weeks ago, and you know, he had a lot of great things to say about Panay. What are your thoughts on him as a player, and where he might fit in as sort of a cornerstone and somebody that you can build an offensive line around, similar to Rashawn Slater?
Definitely. Panay is a physical freak. He's strong, he's big, he's athletic, and he's nasty with his demeanor. Just a physical mindset. To me, when you get those guys that kind of they've got it all, and they've got that mentality to want to put people in the dirt and finish them, typically you're going to have a really good player, pro player on your hands immediately. There's some things I think that you know, Panay will clean up this offseason that will make him even better. I think just simple stuff like you know, hand placement, overall usage of hands, he'll clean that up, and he'll become very, very dangerous in pass protection to a lot of people, especially with the type of strength and length that he has. You know, he's a guy that can move the point of attack, can get to the top of the pass set, and really be effective in dominating, you know, really taking over a game. So Panay is fun to watch. I look forward to eventually working with Panay. You know, for Cowboys fans, he's got the same agent as Tyron Smith and Biadasz. So it should be encouraging. You know, Panay is going to be in a situation and be placed around the right people to help his development, especially during this time where we've got this extra time for him to work. So, you know, those are two guys that I'm really excited about. And I think that they will be tremendous pros moving forward.
And here's the one last crazy note on Panay Sewell is that he put out film that people were saying, oh, that's a top five player as a teenager. He has yet to play as a 20-year-old. He just turned 20 earlier in October. So we're talking about a guy who's only played football. The furthest he's played was at 19 years old, and he was putting out top five film at Oregon. I mean, he's only going to get better.
Yeah,
so I do have to ask you a question about that, though. What is going to be the challenge for you guys? Scouts have talked to us about this, being able to really assess these players when they're not allowed on campus this year. Is especially as an offensive lineman, is that one of those guys that you need to physically see their strength and their size in person and, you know, their football IQ, because you want those really smart guys in the offensive line? Is that going to be the area where they're going to feel challenged a little bit different than skills players?
So, interesting enough, there's two answers to this. When you are Panay and when you are Rashawn, it's not going to matter. Because you can turn on the tape, you know exactly what the heck you're getting with those two guys. But for other guys, it does absolutely create a challenge. And I think we kind of got a glimpse into that, you know, this past combine cycle where, you know, most of the pro days were eliminated, all the visits were eliminated. And so teams relied heavily on agents and guys like myself to really give them credible feedback. You know, there were a lot of teams and a lot of coaches, a lot of GMs that constantly wanted me to send tape and, you know, like of our workouts, just kind of seeing where guys were, you know, and then even like the board work type stuff was very important. As you mentioned, they want to see how these guys think, how these guys process. So it's going to we're going to be faced with some challenges, but the challenges that we're going to be faced with this next combine cycle, we'll be better prepared because we've kind of gone through it already. You know, when you're caught kind of in the wind and not knowing what to expect, you know, that's when leadership qualities come in immediately and you say, okay, we got to go with the skid. And one thing that I know, especially being a leader, especially being a developer, when adversity and a change of schedule and a shift happens, you got to innovate, you got to take action, you got to kind of go with the skid. And that's kind of what we did with a lot of these guys, you know, because there was a, for instance, Kevin Dotson. Kevin Dotson was an All-American at Louisiana Lafayette. No combine invite. Pro day was canceled, but worked his tail off. And his tape it forced teams to go back and look at his tape. He was taken in the fourth round, and he started three games this year for the Pittsburgh Steelers and been phenomenal. That's a guy that, again, he had no combine invite, no real pro day. So they had to trust the tape and trust, the information that they were getting from sources. But I think we're going to be better prepared for the 2021 draft no matter what happens. It's going to be interesting to really see what happens at the combine. Is it that the combine goes into an actual bubble? Because we've all been to Indy. We know that it's set up that where it could very easily be a bubble. But I think what we may end up seeing is that it is a bubble. There's not going to be outside access allowed probably. And they're going to have those guys there, 4 to 5 days and really putting them through the paces there to kind of get an intimate look to see who these guys are. We've already seen the Shrine game canceled. It'll be interesting to see, talking to Jim Nagy, what the Senior Bowl looks like this week. It could be that instead of a week, it's, 10 days or maybe 2 weeks. Who knows? I'm not sure what Jim is going to come up with. But one thing I do know is some of these opportunities for showcases, whether it is at the Senior Bowl, whether it is at the Combine, guys are going to be able to – are going to need to be ready and be prepared to perform and put their best foot forward. But I think as far as us and training guys and even teams will be better prepared to handle this next cycle around versus what we just went through this last year.
Last question for you here, Duke, because I am curious. I know you are all about the complete package with guys. Like I say, you do all the weight training with them. You look at the full physical package and everything like that. I know some people are curious about, man, Tyron Smith's getting up there, and he's had injuries coming up now, but there's been less talk about the Lyle Collins injury, and I think that's interesting given the fact that it is a hip injury. And I know that hip fluidity is such a big thing, with so many positions, but including the offensive line. How important is that recovery going to be for Lyle? How important do you think that injury is? How seriously should people be taking the, hey, look, this is a serious thing that's going to take some care for him to rehab and come back from, because that hip movement is really important for a guy out there at right tackle.
Yeah, it's tremendously important, but to my understanding, based upon the limited knowledge I have about the injury, it's something that he can 100% come back and be ready to play and play at a high level with rehab, with movement prep, with sports med, and just continue to monitor it and rehab the right way, not being forced really to be on a timeline. I think the beautiful thing we have right now for him in terms of recovery is time. So I've got the utmost confidence that Lyle will be resilient and return back to original form, to what he was, and probably in some aspects, maybe even a little better. I think that with an injury like that, it's probably something that is systemic. It's probably something that had probably been lingering that he kind of just blocked out. And it was probably limiting him and his abilities prior to just this year in camp. You probably saw some of it last year on tape. A lot of times dysfunction runs uphill. So a lot of times a thing, something so simple as an ankle injury, which Lyle has had, can affect the knee and the hip alignment. So just looking for him to get back, get healthy. I think that Cowboys fans will be pleased to know that I think he'll be back and better than ever.
Before I let you go, I do want to follow up on that. Cowboy fans have been fairly relentless as it relates to not feeling like Lyle showed up to camp in shape, and then there was this injury. Any chance that with COVID and, if there was some sort of lingering injury from last year that maybe he didn't address, any chance that because of COVID, I think a lot of us were having a hard time kind of working through that there was sort of a compound effect of that getting to the facility and the rehab that he needed, getting the access to the workouts that he needed. And then when you get actually there on the line and you're actually doing offensive line work, which is very different than any individual working out that you might do, that it was kind of a perfect storm for that injury and the way it went down?
That could be, that could be realistic, but I think that what you heard about him not being in shape, I think he was a little heavy, but as far as his shape, I think he was in shape. I think he was in shape. I think he was ready to play. What I think, though, is that injury was around longer, and he just tried to work through it, and it got to the point where he couldn't work through it anymore. And so that's what really became the issue. And that happens to a lot of
guys. And a lot of players do that. I mean, Sean Lee was a player who was trying to work through his injury. So that's a perfect example.
One thing that I've learned, because there's so much that
– Dak Prescott.
There's so much that fans don't see. You know, they don't see it until it becomes available to them. But there's a lot of these guys that are playing with and working through various ailments that they just try to compartmentalize and – you know, leave on the back burner. But it gets to the point where when your quality of life and your just your overall effectiveness is not there, and then you got to make a business decision and do what's best for you. I think that's kind of what you saw with Lyle. And I think to some extent that kind of happened with Tyron. I mean, we've been well aware that he's had issues with stingers and necks and things like that. And I think it just got to a point where he was like, I can't go anymore. You know, and stuff like that happens. One thing about it is on the offensive line in the NFL, injury is almost 100%, you know. And, I mean, everybody's going to get hurt. Everybody's going to have something. And these guys are going to try to play as long as possible. I've got another player on another team that first week of the season tore both ligaments in his thumb on his right hand, ended up having a cast on it, played 5 weeks, and then – they played Monday Night Football and heading into a bye week. That next morning, he was in surgery at 5 a.m. having surgery on the thumb. Came back the next week with the cast on and played, you know. So, you know, the timing of some of these things sucks. And me as a fan, I understand it sucks. But me being a professional in the business, it happens, man, especially on the O-line. It's a violent, it's a physical game. And as I said, injuries have 100% rate in this business, and especially at that position. So it's got to happen. But I've got, again, the utmost confidence that Lyle will come back and be ready to go.
Well, hopefully, yeah,
we appreciate you, just your insight. Cause like I said, I think a lot of us, you know, offensive line, I feel like, is one of those positions. It just looks like a bunch of guys kind of guarding the quarterback up front. I don't think people realize sort of the intricacies and the nuances that go into it and what makes a good offensive lineman. So when we get someone here that is what they do day in and day out, as you said, it's your lane. It's nice sort of getting your insight and kind of your thought. But it does sound like the Cowboys fans at least, need to recalibrate their expectations as it relates to this new crop of offensive linemen, the absence of some of these guys that bordered on elite if they weren't elite, and especially Bentonucci this week, who has to deal with that.
Yeah, situation. Yeah, and they need to start learning up on Sugarland, Texas's own Rashawn Slater. And you can do that. You can keep up with his pre-draft process just by following Duke on Twitter at BigDuke50 and on Instagram at TheBigDuke50. He is the offensive line renaissance man with OL Masterminds and pre-draft training and everything else. And so you definitely need to keep up with him to keep up with all things offensive line with the Cowboys and the NFL. So, Duke, we appreciate you so much, man.
Jane, Bobby, thank you for having me. I know we've been trying to do this for a while.
Yes.
Our schedules have all been all over the place. That's kind of been the theme. You know, last words to you guys, you know, stay safe out there. And I think we all can do our part to be the individual change we want to see. Lead where you are. Lead where you are.
All right. So I guess some perspective is what we got there on this offensive line. I don't know if I feel any more encouraged. I don't know if the fans do either after hearing a guy that knows a thing or two about what an offensive line should look like. But I think a lot of people are in agreement that with this current record, there's been no team that has ever gone to the playoffs. That's correct, right, Bobby? I've got that stat right.
Sure, I think so. I'm not 100% positive, but I believe you're right. I will say that this is the...
If we start seeing more COVID shutdowns and we see this new playoff schedule,
yeah,
there could be yet another road for the Cowboys, Bobby. So I definitely think that's interesting. But at least, again, we are trying to manage expectations for the fans.
That's the theme for 2020, manage expectations.